Blog Talk Radio.
Right into this world, all alone. Gotta take your soul, you're on your own. A crow fly.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Weigh In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin. We'll be joined tonight with co-host Trey Patterson as we bring one of our last shows of 2014. We will have a show next Sunday night to make sure we hit all the bowl games we need to and bring everybody in on the discussion. Can't do one Wednesday night, Christmas Eve. I don't think anybody wants to listen to sports talk on Christmas Eve, so we're going to take the night off, be with family, friends, whatever you guys do, but we'll be back Sunday night for hopefully a long show as we get ready. New Year's Day is approaching. A lot of great bowl games going to be coming up, so we're excited about them, of course. I'm ready to see 2014 be done with. It's been a tough year. But there's some good things that came out of the year as well. But 2014 is one I'll never forget. But I'm ready to move on to more exciting things in 2015. Tonight we're going to talk about the NFL, and we're going to talk about the playoffs, some scenarios, who's in, who's out. Wow, what a day in the NFL. We're gonna talk about the Carolina Panthers, how as of today they're in first place in their division. They will be in the playoffs if they beat the Atlanta Falcons next Sunday. I think it's going to be Sunday evening they're going to play that game. And then you just never know what can happen in football. Does a team with a losing record deserve to be in the playoffs? I think not. But, you know, I like the Panthers. I hope they get in and do a good job. But at the end of the day, every team in that division is terrible. So, yeah, Tampa Bay, of course, they're the last team in the division, but Atlanta, New Orleans, and Carolina, there's not a chance that either one of those teams could probably win a playoff game. The only good thing about it is they host it. So you never know. Carolina could have Green Bay or Detroit coming to their place if they win. The same for Atlanta. So it's not going to be an easy game in that first round, in the wild card round. Some great teams in the playoffs. It's going to be fun to watch. Tonight, Seattle, Arizona are playing to really see who's going to get that home field advantage and first round bye. Seattle's hot right now. Arizona's playing with a quarterback that was on the San Diego Chargers practice squad a few weeks ago. So you talk about a resilient team, the Arizona Cardinals. They've won 11 games this year, and I bet nobody can name their quarterbacks, really. But a great job they've done in the toughest division in football, or at least we thought was the toughest division in football. Seattle's making a push. San Francisco last night chokes a big lead. Harbaugh's last game will be next Sunday. And, wow, the biggest disappointment, surprise to me, are the San Francisco 49ers not making the playoffs and ending the season the way they have. I mean, it's terrible. You lose to Oakland. You lose. I mean, you're up 21 points about on San Diego and you lose. But that's neither here nor there. We're going to talk some NFL tonight and talk about some of the games that's coming up in the next week. And since we're going to do a show Sunday night, some of those games will be going on already. And college football, college basketball, what's going on? My question to the listeners out there is, when do you start actually watching college basketball? Is it when the conference games start in January? Because college basketball to me is just not that exciting right now. The Auburn Tigers did have a huge win over Xavier. And I know people are like, well, Xavier's not ranked. But, you know, Xavier's a team that's going to be in the tournament. They're usually in the tournament. And for the Auburn Tigers basketball program, that was a huge win for them. I mean, it seems like this is a team that would be beaten by 30 or 40 points by a team like Xavier in years past. But they showed up last night. Bruce Pearl has done a great job of getting the most out of the talent he has. It's going to take him a couple of years to put a team on the court that could be a contender to make the tournament. We all know that, but very impressed with the way they won. And talk about impressive. The Kentucky Wildcats played UCLA last night, and at the half, the UCLA had 7 points. And I've been watching college basketball a long time. I've been playing basketball a long time, officiating it. I don't think I've ever seen a team over 10 years old score less than 7 points and a half. I mean, that's almost impossible to do. I mean, I could get five guys that I know to go right now and play Kentucky, and I would bet anything we would have more than 7 points and a half. So how does UCLA score 7 points in one half? Now, UCLA is not a ranked team anymore. They're not the powerhouse of old, but, you know, UCLA is still a respectable team, and they get held to 7 points. There's something about this Kentucky defense, this team that's loaded with All-Americans, and some people don't believe me. And you know, I hear talk about, well, Alabama's so good in football, they could beat an NFL team. No, that's never going to happen. But I'm telling you, this Kentucky basketball team is good enough to beat one or two of the worst NBA teams out there. And the reason is these guys have a ton of NBA talent on their team already. A lot of college teams only have a few pros. Well, their entire backups are NBA. They get better competition in practice than they do on the court. And it's just so weird to see a team that's this dominating. When you look at the points they've given up, and I know they played some teams, they give up 51 points to Texas, 28 to Montana State. And I know it's Montana State, but 28 points. They gave up 46 to Columbia, 70 to North Carolina, 44 to UCLA, 40 to Kansas. I mean, Kansas is a high-potent offensive team, and they give up 40 points. So this Kentucky team is for real. They're the best team in the country, and like I said last night, it's a two-team race this year in college basketball. Duke, this could be the year that the Duke Blue Devils come in and make that push to win it all. They're a very good team. They went on the road to Wisconsin and won by 10. They beat Michigan State by 10. They beat Stanford by 11. So, I mean, this is a team that's been tested already. They beat UConn by 10. So they've been tested, and now it's getting close to the ACC play. And it's going to be interesting to see what the Kentucky Wildcats do. And it's a good team. I mean, I pumped them up last year, you know, before the season started. And they finally started playing like the team that I thought they would in March. Once they got to the SEC tournament, they almost beat Florida in the championship game, and then they made it all the way to the championship, losing to a hot Connecticut team. And I still, to this day, I mean, that was a fluke. I think Kentucky was a better team. They were just a lot younger at the time. That stage was just a little bit too big for them. But Kentucky's here, and it's hard to go undefeated. I'm not saying Kentucky's going undefeated in college basketball this year. Not trying to say that. But it's just going to be real tough to beat a team like this with so much length to them, so much athleticism, some returning guards. Coach Calipari is a great coach. He's great at getting more out of less. And, I mean, you give him five-star talent everywhere, it's going to be almost impossible to beat him. He's a businessman. He understands what it takes to coach, to motivate these kids. And see, the thing is, you have all of these kids are used to being the man on their team, the state, wherever they reside, they're the best player there. And they're not used to playing that team basketball. But Calipari, it took him a while last year with that team to get him to play team basketball and to do it his way. And I think this year will be a lot easier because they have some returning starters, actually, that bought into what Calipari was doing. He told them specifically, he said, "You've done it your way for an entire season. This is what's happened. Now it's time to do it my way." And when they did it his way, you saw what was possible, a championship, a runner-up. And this year I think they're going to go for it all. Calipari is one of the best in the business, guys. I mean, you have to be able to recruit to win. Bruce Pearl's a great coach, but without the talent, he's not going to be winning championships. And Calipari's not stupid. He goes out and gets the best players. But don't make a joke about it and think he just wins because of talent. It takes a special kind of coach to be able to coach that kind of talent and to get him to play team basketball. So I get tired of people saying Calipari only wins because of talent. Well, that goes for most coaches. I mean, you know, Krzyzewski has a great team every year. He recruits well. That's why they're good every year. But it does take some kind of special coach to be able to take all these egos, all of these superstars, and to be able to put them on the court and get a good result. We saw what it was like last year. Kentucky was god awful for a time being. I mean, for an entire season, they played selfish. But something happened in that championship game against Florida where they turned it over. I mean, they just turned it around and started playing team basketball and started believing in themselves, and the rest is history. So we'll keep an eye on college basketball, but not until it gets into the season a little bit. I mean, I just wanted to point out how good Kentucky was and how good Duke. I've watched them both. They're just in another league. So let's move on to the NFL today. The Carolina Panthers at home took care of Cleveland. And what this did, Cam Newton came back from being injured in a car accident. They took care of Cleveland. Johnny Manziel got a taste of what it was like to play in the NFL. He gets helped off the field. He got hurt, so they came back to their original starter. It didn't do too much good. Carolina took care of business at home. But the big thing about this game in New Orleans again lost, I think, the fourth time in a row at home, lost 30-14 to the Saints. And hold on, I think I see Sonya and Jason in the queue. Sonya, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, Tarvin?
I'm just sitting here watching football and talking some sports. What about y'all?
Doing basically the same.
Who is this Lindley kid for Arizona? Who is that?
Lindley kid.
Yeah, the quarterback.
Well, I've got Jason's going off. Sorry about that.
No, he's a quarterback for Arizona. He was on the practice squad of San Diego a few weeks ago, but here he is playing for first place in the NFC West.
Hey. Dude, you already know my feelings. How many times have I talked about the NFC this season? Especially the South.
Oh, the NFC South is the best division in football, Sonya. Don't be kidding yourself.
Yeah, right. When the Sun Conference has a better record than the NFC South, something is really wrong. It is just ridiculous that any team in the NFC South is going to be playing for a playoff spot. Not one team deserves a playoff spot. And today, I mean, seriously, look, I love my Falcons. I am glad they won. But when you look at the way they won, and you look at it's like the Saints went from, dude, what the heck is going on? Then we got the Panthers. Panthers and the Falcons will be playing next week for first place.
Yeah, that's two bad teams. I mean, the Falcons, to me, they're more explosive, but they have no defense. The Panthers, they don't really have anything. I mean, if you look at that team, they have a rookie receiver. Cam's been battling injuries all year. No offensive line, no defense. I mean, man, and the sad thing about it is not only do they make the playoffs, but they get a chance to host the first-round game. I mean, that's insane.
It is. It's just ridiculous. I mean, dude, that's just bad football. I have to kind of go back to when Mark Sanchez was with the Jets, and there was – they played, who was it, baby? Was it Tampa Bay? They played that night?
Tennessee,
that's right. And Trent Dilfer and Steve Young gave the ultimate post-game breakdown. And there were some key phrases used there, like, there's some good football being played out there, but this is not it. And, you know, how can you be a quarterback and accelerate the down? How do you accelerate downward? That's what I see coming from the NFC South right now. And some of these kids who people ignored, you know, it's kind of like, let's go back to Russell Wilson. Out of his draft class, he was, you know, ranked at the bottom. And right now he's doing better than all of them. So it's just one of those things. You know, football is cyclical, and I guess it's time for it to, you know, cycle out for the NFC South. But it's just ridiculous that the amount of bad football that we're paying to see. It's not like college. You know, of course we go pay to see those games, but pro is a totally different level. You know, you choose to be a fan of a team. You go out and you buy that merchandise. And right now, I don't feel comfortable spending my money on a team that's putting that kind of product on the field. And I don't know if you saw the link that I posted today about Mike Smith.
No.
You didn't see that one? Well, supposedly, the rumor is that he's basically that, what's his name, Arthur Blank, has basically made it known that he's going to be letting him go. And from the rumor mill, it looks like they're eyeing the Broncos' Adam Gase, or Gase.
Yeah, that's a dumb
possible
move.
Replacement.
Yeah, if you can't get a well-known name into Atlanta, keep what you have. At least this guy is, the players like him, and they could possibly make the playoffs. But you can't bring some no-name person in from Denver to coach, be a head coach of something. I mean, that's some of these NFL teams. Black Monday's coming up next Monday, and some of these coaches are going to be let go way too early. And I think Atlanta, if they do that, I'm not saying the guy doesn't deserve to be fired. I mean, he's had his chance, but be careful who you bring in here, because it could be a lot worse in Atlanta. I mean, he's not a terrible coach. I have seen worse, like Rex Ryan, but Rex Ryan?
Yeah, but there's something missing, though, because when you look at all the talent that's on the Falcons, I mean, you look at that roster, and you see that talent, and you're just like, okay, we should be a heck of a lot closer to our goal of going to the Super Bowl than we are now. But it's almost like two steps forward, three steps back. And, you know, I'm like you. It's like I've looked at the article this morning, and I'm looking at it right now. It's just saying that he is considering, and these are just rumors, so everybody know that this is a fact, this is just rumors, but that he's told some confidants that he expects to retain Thomas Dimitroff, but that could be revisited. But he has his eye on Denver's Adam Gase. So, you know, either he knows something we don't, or I don't know. I just think there needs to be something done down there, because there's just too much freaking talent on the, the dome.
One thing they started focusing on it a little more, getting Matthews in, the offensive line. The Atlanta Falcons remind me of the Cowboys a little bit, that before this year, of course. But, you know, Dallas all of a sudden now, the coach looks better, Romo looks better, the running game's better, the defense is playing better, and it's all because of the offensive line. Until Atlanta gets that ironed out, they're going to struggle. And Matt Ryan is not a quarterback that can escape. He's not going to escape. He's like Drew Brees. They get hit, they get hit. So, you know, bring a Cam Newton in or somebody like that with the current offensive line, you could be a few games better. But until you address that offensive line, Atlanta is going to be Atlanta. I mean, just look at Dallas, Sonya. Look what's happened to them over the period of the years once they started bulking up that offensive line now. Garrett, Coach of the Year, people are saying, and he's a terrible coach.
Oh, dude, we looked at the game, and I'm sitting there, and Andrew Luck is a quarterback. Like, he is the young Peyton Manning. You know what I mean? He is the heir apparent for the next level of elite. And for him to have the kind of game he had today, and I'm so glad that they took him out. I hate it for my husband, because he's his fantasy football quarterback. But he couldn't get anything popping. Dallas was clicking on all cylinders. This team is back. I don't think that we have to sit here and wonder if it's a fluke or not. It might be a fluke this season. They've got to be consistent with it. But for this season, Dallas has shown up. And I think part of that is because of the fact that maybe Jerry Jones has realized, dude, let my coach, let my coordinators, let them do the job that I hired them to do. And that's been the biggest hindrance with Dallas, is the fact that Jerry Jones, he's just got to stick his nose and his fingers into everything. Dude, leave it alone. Let them do it.
And another thing that I have to give kudos to Jerry Jones for, or to, you know, leaving the same coaching staff in, you know, leaving the coach, because sometimes, you know, just you fire a coach too early based off his win-loss record, Cleveland, and you just fire him and start moving him around. But one thing Dallas is starting to get is some consistency. They're used to their coach. They know what's expected in practice every day. They know what game day is going to be like with this coach. And I think with the offensive line being rebuilt and the quarterback, Romo's been the scapegoat, the butt of all jokes for Dallas, and it wasn't his fault all these years. Now there's some consistency in Dallas, and this is a very dangerous team.
I definitely agree there. He has stepped up to the plate, and it's been one of those, wait a minute, hold on. Wait, is this the same Romo we're watching?
He's amazing. And it's the offensive line. I mean, a bad offensive line can make any quarterback look terrible. I mean, you saw Drew Brees this year. He hasn't looked as good.
Yeah,
look at Matt
Rodgers.
Ryan. I mean, yeah.
Look at Aaron Rodgers. Everybody knows that Green Bay's O-line is just terrible. Just terrible. Terrible. That man spent so much time on his behind, but he has earned the title of elite because he can still make something happen having no protection. But it gets to the point, just like Cam in the game we were discussing, it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, right before his accident, and he was just putting himself, I mean, he looked like an old man out there. You were just like, please, Cam, don't go back in, because he was getting slaughtered. And that's what happens when you don't have an O-line that can protect your quarterback. You just have to, I mean, literally you've taken his shelf life and you've cut it in half. Because no quarterback, I don't care who they are, they can't go out there and take that punishment every single week. You've got to have a strong O-line.
No, and you have to take your hats off to Cam Newton. If they do make the playoffs this year, with that team losing everything they lost, with all the injuries on the team, Cam's missed a couple games due to injuries and surgery and all that, car accident. Ron Rivera, I mean, you can't give him the credit, I think, because I just think he's terrible. But, you know, you look at Cam Newton, you have to give kudos and props to him for what he's been able to do this year as a leader.
Oh.
He's starting to mature a little bit. He does get beat up a lot. My God, I don't see how he walks. But you give him 5 years more of this, he won't be in the NFL anymore. So if you're Carolina, you either get an offensive line, or if you're Cam Newton, you jump ship and you start riding on a ship that's got a better offensive line, because he won't be in the NFL in 5 years if something doesn't change.
He's gone after this year, Tarvin.
Where's he going, Jason?
Yeah, hey, Tarvin. Cam's gone after this year. He's not going to stay. You're going to test the market. Someone's going to pay mega money for him.
Give him a good O-line.
I actually, you know, prior to Bridgewater, I would have loved to have Cam up in Minnesota. He's a great quarterback. Nothing but props for him. I mean, he basically has a team right now that's nothing. He's doing it all on his own.
And Kuechly.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Hey.
We'll see. I hope he gets out of there. But, hey, guess who's here with us right now? I put a missing alert person out for him. Trey Patterson is back. Trey, welcome
Yay!
To the show. Trey, you're back. Say hello. Uh-oh. He's missing, guys. He's
hey,
really
here
missing.
I am.
Amber alert. Amber alert.
What's up, Trey?
Sorry, I was on. I couldn't get off mute for some reason.
There he is.
Hey, Trey.
What's happening, guys?
We've missed you.
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of weeks. Good to be back.
I paid them to say that, too, Trey. Just by the way,
I figured you'd give them a little bit of a retainer.
Well, Trey, what do you think about what's going on in the NFC South right now with Carolina and Atlanta playing for the championship next week? And how about them Cowboys?
Well, I don't even want to talk about the NFC South. I mean, it's terrible football in the NFL, and the fact that one of those teams makes the playoffs just is disturbing. But, you know, what's really surprising from this week is how the Cowboys dismantling the Colts. That shocked me. Andrew Luck was terrible in that game. The Cowboys' defense seems inspired. I don't know, Tarvin. That is a team that I think we have to start labeling them a real contender at this point. Which is, I mean, Tony Romo being good in December is shocking.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that we talked about it. You know, Romo's been a quarterback that everybody has placed the blame on, and Garrett, but we all talked about the defensive line or the offensive line of Dallas, and now all of a sudden they're blocking, the running's better, the passing game's better, Romo's healthier, the defense looks good. I mean, what's the weakness of this Dallas team? Because I just don't see one.
Yeah, I mean, they're real balanced right now. I mean, when everybody, if you recall in the draft, when they took Zach Martin, you know, 15th or everybody was like, Manziel. Boy, I mean, that guy's been real good, Tarvin. I mean, real good. He solidified that line. I mean, sometimes you only need a single piece to solidify a line because people can play the positions they're more comfortable in. And man, DeMarco Murray's having a great year because of it. He's going to get paid. And the defense, really, it's easier to play defense, I think, when you're pounding the other opponent, you know, for time of possession, and they're having to sort of change up their team in the second half. So, I mean, great schemes for Dallas right now. And, you know, again, Jason Garrett as well, Tarvin, we all talked about whether he should have been fired last year after another 8-8 year, and looking pretty good right now for keeping him.
They do. Well, Jason Minson, while I have you here, your Minnesota Vikings look very impressive today to me. I mean, this is a team I want to reflect back on the entire season. They lost Adrian Peterson, a rookie quarterback, I mean, coming in. I mean, this Minnesota Vikings team is a lot better than I think people give them credit for. That was a phenomenal game on the road in Miami today, but you guys ought to feel good, Jason, about your good draft pick coming up and getting Peterson back properly. Minnesota's a playoff contender easy next year.
Yeah, I mean, what you know, not having AP this year, you know, pretty much season a wash.
I liked what I saw out of the coaching staff of Minnesota as well.
Yeah, and they've been crippled by injury on defense. So, I mean, they were playing with Band-Aids today. But, you know, I feel good, very good about the direction we're going. And for what Teddy's done with what he was given, you know, he's leading pretty much all rookies this year. So it's not like he's having a terrible season. He's just, you know, got to have protection.
Yep, and we'll keep a close eye on the Vikings. And Trey, one team that could lose their quarterback and their coach, the Chicago Bears, give us your thoughts on Tressman and also why Cutler didn't play today.
Well, here's my thoughts on Tressman and the Bears. Last year, if you recall, when their offense was clicking, basically Tressman, everybody was like, man, this offense is great. You know, Tressman's, you know, a genius. Look at the pieces he's put and how he's put them together. And then a year later, we're all talking about him being fired. And really the difference to me is the quarterback play. I don't know that you put a lot of this on Tressman. The defense is banged up and not great, and they need defensive draft picks to get better. And then Jay Cutler's played terrible. I mean, he's had, if you go through a lot of quarterback gurus, they'll break down his read. They talk about, you know, how he's just cavalier with the football, how when Tressman calls a play, and, you know, it has read one, it'll be to Jeffries. You know, he's throwing over the middle to Bennett, who's double covered. I mean, it just seems like that Cutler has been uninspired this year, and it's really it may cost Tressman his job, and I'm not sure that it should. And I think that's really what Tressman is doing is, you know, I think he's to the point where he knows what Cutler is doing to him and his poor play.
Yeah, I mean, Sonia, what do you think about the Bears right now? I mean, where do they go? Are they going to fire Tressman? I think they have no choice but to get rid of this coach and this quarterback.
The problem is it's like our buddy Quinn, Jason and I were just talking about this earlier today, and everybody knows we love Quinn to death, but we were having a conversation when they were playing one night, and he goes, yeah, it's our defense. Our defense just sucks. And we were like, no, it's your offense and your special teams. I don't know what's going on up there. The Bears are not playing good football, and something needs to change. I don't know if you need to get rid of the coach, maybe get rid of the entire management team. Because at some point, especially with teams like the Falcons and the Bears and the Browns and the Lions, you can't keep just switching out coaches and leaving the same management in place. You know what I mean? Because it's like, wait a minute, wait. Because when you go back and you look at some of these teams and you look at some of the seasons and you look at the common denominator, like when I look at the Jets, okay, Rex Ryan was there, you know, at the beginning of the downward spiral. You've had how many quarterbacks in and out since then, and what's going on with the Jets? There's only one common denominator, him, and that management. You know, it's the same with the other ones. I think that we really need to stop looking at – so much as if the coach is good or bad, and start looking at some of these owners and some of these general managers, because something is not clicking with a lot of these teams. The NFL this season has not been great football.
No, it hasn't. Before we bring Quinn on right here, Sonia, those are some good points. And, you know, they've taken defense out of football. They've tried to. But, Quinn, I remember, Trey, do you remember when we kind of I talked about the Bears could lose about five of their first seven games and I almost got ran off my own show? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I seem to recall something like that.
Yeah, it's just when I watched the Bears, like Sonia said, the management wasn't just Trestman. It was something with this team, and Cutler is a quarterback that I've never liked. But, Quinn, welcome to the show. I mean, I'm sorry about your Bears, but damn, they're bad, man.
Yeah, well, Trestman's going to be gone for sure because the ownership talked about it after the Saints game Monday. Trestman's gone, and Emery could be gone.
What about
the
Cutler?
Thing
I mean,
he's
the cancer.
You're going to blame it on – what about when the defense gave up 55 points to New England and Green Bay? Is that Cutler's fault too?
Part of it is,
I mean, there's some interceptions thrown there that give some pretty bad field position in those games as well.
All right, so it was Cutler's fault because they got 55 points put on him.
Everybody on the team hates Cutler, including Cutler.
Tim, is that a proven fact or is that an opinion?
Well, look, if I'm around somebody and my body language, you can tell if I like him or not, Quinn. I can read people, and those teammates are like, oh, here we go again. Cutler's going to throw somebody else.
All right, let's make a poor decision and bring in another Grossman or Orton who completely sucks. All right, let's do that. Let's see how that works out.
Well, I heard they're trying
who are we going to bring in?
I don't know. That's up to your management. But I heard there's a trade involved maybe with Tennessee Titans. And I don't know who you'd be getting, but hopefully you could do what Minnesota did and draft a quarterback that pans out, because it's just hard to find a good quarterback. But Cutler, it's not that he's a bad quarterback, in my opinion. It's his attitude and the way he treats people and the way he acts. I mean, that's a leader. And you remember Cam Newton, the way he was acting like a little baby. And his teammates almost just turned on him until he realized what was happening. Cutler has got to grow up, Quinn. He has to grow up. He's still a baby.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It sounded like Trestman and Emery could be gone, but the only reason why the management met up, in my opinion, is because there were 11,000 empty seats. And if you know the Bears, they rarely have empty seats. And it just shows the fans are sick of it. The fans are sick because the ownership doesn't really care about winning. All they care is about putting bucks in seats. If you realize their past coaches, they haven't gotten a proven coach. They've risked it, just like they risked with this. And I'm sick and tired of them risking on unproven coaches. The only one that has panned out is Dicka.
Dicka could come back, Quinn. I mean, he's still alive at least. You could probably get him to come back and do a better job. But, I mean, you know, when Tressa was hired, you know, it was
a question. Hold up.
Go ahead.
I got to get in here real quick. Is Quinn really arguing that Lovie Smith, who won 10 games the season he was fired, proven coach? Because Lovie Smith was pretty good if he was there.
He did do pretty well, but he also had a span of where he was having this hard time winning that game. I'll give you that. All right. So Dick and Lovey. How many other coaches we've had? Okay, Dick and Lovey have only been proven. I'll give you Lovey.
Well, Quinn, it seems to me the Bears fans, we're not going to talk about the Bears too long, but it seems like a lot of Bear fans are just happy that they didn't get blown out today. How do you feel about that game?
They fought. They tried. They fought. They stayed in it, causing Clausen played better than I thought he would. The defense actually played pretty well.
See, that's the problem right there. If you lose at home to Detroit and you're a Bears, it doesn't matter. There's no moral victories in football. If you lose, you lose. Mm-hmm. You win. And I think that they're
Bears
starting to speak your mindset.
Bears fans are sick of losing. I can tell you that. I can tell you Bears fans are one of the most impatient fans you'll ever meet.
Yeah, so we'll see, Quinn. Man, I'm sorry about your team. I'm sorry about the Bears, the Notre Dame, and the Auburn Tigers. Man, you've had a tough year like I have. But the Bears will bounce back, Trey, because they do have a lot of talent on that team. You get the right coach in, you get a better quarterback. And what do you think about Cutler real quick before we move off the Bears? I just think he's a spoiled brat, and I think he's the problem with that team.
Well, I mean, I really don't think it's Trestman, and I think defensive coordinator. You could point some fingers at some other coaching staff that Trestman's put in, but offensively, that team was really good last year, and the only thing that got different this year was Jay Cutler's play, offensively. So I think Cutler, you go one of two ways, Tarvin. Either you stick it out another year because Cutler has another year on his contract, and you give Trestman and Cutler another year, and you bring the whole team back. Or if you have to do anything, Carmen, you get rid of everybody. Cutler, the GM, and the coach, and you start from scratch, and you tell everybody you're rebuilding. Because from what I see at Tarvin, that's the only two things you can do. If you do a coaching fire and you keep Cutler, or you fire the GM, I mean, I just think that any of those scenarios are going to lead to more firings next year. You either have to give it a full year, Tarvin, and then clean house next year if it doesn't work out, or you completely clean house this year. And that's my thoughts.
Well, Cutler's gone if you know, some team will take him. That's the only reason you bench Cutler right now is to keep him healthy, keep him from getting injured, so somebody will pony up and pay at least some of that contract that you owe him. Not all of it. Nobody's going to pay that much. But I could see the Titans paying half of it maybe. The Titans want a quarterback, and they think that they can get Cutler. He's from Nashville, that he could come in and actually do something. I don't think so, but the Bears are way, way too talented of a team to be in this situation. And that's why it's not just about talent. You see some teams with less talent, like Arizona, look what they're doing this year. So if the right chemistry gets in there, and like Sonia said, management, you have to look at them. It's not just about firing coaches. It's about dealing with what you have in front of you. Management makes bad decisions. I'm a manager. I make bad decisions too. So I can imagine what they're making with all that money. But let's move off the Chicago Bears for a moment, Trey. One surprise, not too big of a surprise, the Detroit Lions this year. They're playing Green Bay for a chance. Who gets the first round bye if Detroit beats Green Bay next week or Green Bay beats Detroit? How's that going to shake out with who gets the number one overall seed?
Well, Detroit's going to get it if they win. I think if they lose, I mean, I honestly don't know the scenario, but I know if Detroit wins, then, I mean, well, the Cardinals are still the number one seed with 11 wins. I mean, the Cardinals have to lose. But Detroit is, I think, the next runner-up right now.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's shocking to see Detroit. And Detroit's a team that has a lot of talent on this as well. They're very up and down, but they've played very consistent for the most part this year, unlike the New Orleans Saints. But we're not – anything you want to touch on in the NFL before we move on to college, Trey? Anything we didn't talk about?
No, let's move on to college.
Well, I mean, I didn't see it posted all the way in sports. And if you want to call in 646-716-5564, the Jameis Winston ruling, Trey, I mean, you're a big Florida State fan. Any surprise here that Jameis Winston, nothing was found, and we're going to move on, hopefully, from all this?
Well, I mean, we should. And I will say, you know, I have not been a poster of this kind of stuff in Wayne Sports, but there are some who are posting a lot of negativity about Jameis Winston, and I saw them go quiet a lot after all these fake allegations and all this stuff. And if you can't put it to bed now, you're a Jameis Winston hater after basically every single entity that could investigate this has basically found for Jameis Winston. Then I just think you need to look in the mirror and stop hating so much, because it really is. At this point, Tarvin, it should be done. We should all stop talking about it. But those those people who made a lot of comments, including ESPN correspondent, seem to take a lot of sides without knowing a lot of facts, not understanding evidence, and certainly not understanding how these cases are won and lost and have never litigated one themselves. Made a lot of comments that are pretty stupid, Tarvin. And right now, you know, it looks like it should happen from the very beginning based on the facts.
Well, it's funny. I went on several months ago when all this was going on, Joe Shad was throwing Winston under the bus, and he threw Cam Newton under the bus. And I asked him, I said, Joe, how does it feel to try to ruin another kid's life and to be nothing at ESPN? Well, I don't see his tweets anymore. I guess he didn't like my post, but it's true. These ESPN people and some of the media, they can really destroy the name of a kid. And Cam Newton was destroyed by this guy, tried to be. He had I don't know what was going on, but Winston was as well. Sonia, I mean, give us your thoughts right quick on Jameis Winston.
I am so glad it's over. I hope not to ever hear this kid's name again until the NFL draft comes up. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, we all sit here. We know kids, when they're 18, 19, we know how we were. Kids make stupid decisions. The problem with James is, and it's his fault too, he's got to accept some responsibility for it, is that when you're in a high-profile position like that, such as being the starting quarterback for a team that just won the national championship, you can't make those same decisions as if you're an 18-year-old that's living next door, you know, working at Publix somewhere. You know, the spotlight is on you. And one thing that I think that he failed to realize is, and this is something that goes back to his days in Hueytown, because remember, he's from Alabama, so we already knew, you know, there were already stories and things going around about him before he went to FSU. But it all kind of leads back to the media. And he began to get the big head when he was all over the local papers and getting covered by the local media there. And then there's this, you know, attitude of entitlement because, you know, don't you know who I am? And once you take an ego like that and you put it in a spotlight, guess what happens? It just grows exponentially. So here's this guy who's basically been coddled and you know, had his ego stroked all through high school, going into college, and now he's realizing, wait a minute, I just can't do what I want. Now, sad thing is, there are some things that were blown out of proportion, but there are some things that were, you know, he did it. It's straight and simple. Will he learn from this? Hopefully. I am hoping that he does. But when you've got people like Bo Jackson, who's the other one? I think it was Emmitt Smith, who all tried to you know, kind of tug on his coattails and pull him to the side and give him some advice and mentorship, and he kind of rebuffed it and was disrespectful towards them, I don't see it happening anytime soon. He might have to go, you know, the course of a la Mike Vick. Because think about it, Mike Vick had a huge ego, especially when he was here in Atlanta, had a huge ego from V-Tech, huge ego in the NFL, and boom. And he is humble now, and he's a changed person. So I think that's what it's going to have to take for James to get himself together. Now back to the media. The media is, and I'm going to quote the Warner Boy here, the devil, okay? The media, you can have these guys who have people hang on their every word. They can destroy your reputation and they can build it up. And the thing about it is, when they first report the negative story, the negative press about you, that's in 24 size font, bold letters. You know, they've got it on the front page. It's all just splashed all over. It's on the ticker. It's everywhere. But when a story turns out to be false, you get a little bitty blurb on the back page at the bottom of the classifieds, you know, saying that we're sorry, we were wrong, or we retract this statement, whatever, whatever. So what I think people need to start doing is stop buying so much into media hype. There's always an agenda behind any sort of media, whether it's college, whether it's, you know, regular news. You can't sit here and take what you hear from the media as fact. There's always going to be somebody's opinion or somebody's bias woven into those words and woven into that story. So I totally agree with Trey. It's like, let's just let this thing die. Let's move on. We've got playoffs to look forward to.
Well, Trey, I mean, speaking of playoffs here, your Florida State Seminoles will be traveling Pasadena. I mean, how does this news really affect what they're going to do? I mean, Florida State's a 9.5-point, 10-point underdog. I mean, how's that possible?
Well, I mean, this is a team that, by the way, they're getting healthy. The starting defensive tackles practicing again, which is huge for Florida State because they're not very deep at that position. But one of the things that Tarvin, you know, with this that people don't realize is when everyone was criticizing Jimbo Fisher, saying, well, how could he protect Jameis Winston? And how could he come off, you know, come out at the media so harshly when they were basically making judgments without evidence themselves? Well, you know who really hears this now, Tarvin, even more so? The Malik Henrys and Josh Sweats of the world, and certainly their parents, two five-star recruits who signed with, who basically verbally committed to Florida State, and there's more that will come from this. Because now, even more so, do they see a head coach and a coaching staff defending their players, but now they see that it's justified in the law. I mean, that's going to be big, Tarvin. And what I like now, Tarvin, is we can start focusing on the last two Heisman-winning quarterbacks facing off against each other and two really good football teams in Pasadena. And that's what it really boils down to, Tarvin, is we get now a focused Jameis Winston and a focused Marcus Mariota. Pretty good, going to be pretty good.
Well, Trey, what would you say if it came out today that Jimbo or that Jameis, they did find him guilty and kicked him out of school? What would your opinion be on Jimbo Fisher then?
Well, I think you have to protect your players, but I think as you know, Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher are cut from the same cloth in that regard. And you know, Jimbo Fisher would probably still defend his guy as being a guy who made a mistake or whatever, or I don't know what he would say, actually. And I think my opinion would certainly change. But this was like the whole DJ Pettaway thing. You know, Nick Saban just came out and basically redefended his decision to put DJ Pettaway back on the team. You and I were very critical of that. And, you know, he said, hey, you know, one of the things that I liked what he said was he went back to Mushu Muhammad at Michigan State. And I know, Sonia, you probably heard this story. Who was a guy who got in a lot of trouble, some felony-level trouble at Michigan State. Nick Saban let him back on the team. I ended up playing 15 years in the NFL, and the kid has, you know, the guy, he's not a kid anymore, has four kids, and his oldest is in Princeton now. And Nick Saban says, hey, I gave him a second chance, and he turned his whole life around and had a daughter at Princeton. Now, so that, there's a side to this as well, and I can certainly see that, is, you know, and I think that Nick and Jimbo are guys of that flaw. They're gonna defend these 18 and 19 year old kids, and hopefully they can save them. And I think that's exactly what they're trying to do is be a coach and a mentor.
Well, Trey, you made a good point. The only problem I had with Saban or any coach for that matter that lets a kid come back from something like a violent crime like Pettaway, I mean, on campus they're gonna still see the same students. That was my only beef with the whole entire thing. So I mean, coaches do have interest in kids' lives other than football. So I've seen it with Gus. I've seen it with Saban. Jimbo's showing it now. I mean, they do actually care about the future. It's not just, can you win me games? Can you do this? They do want to see them succeed. But we'll get back into the Florida State talk. Excuse me. But the head coaching search at Michigan, Trey, is going on right now. Jim Harbaugh's name, I hear from people, and my God, I don't know if you heard this, but he's a done deal to come to Michigan. That's Harbaugh. I mean, have you heard anything on the coaching search at Michigan? Who else are they interviewing besides or Harbaugh or even talking about?
Well, I don't know they're interviewing anybody right now, Carmen. I think they've put, I mean, all of their eggs in this basket. Now, from what I'm hearing, John is extremely interested. Apparently his family is lobbying him for the job. And he's just trying to basically rectify. I mean, he likes to be a pro football coach. And so, but they're paying him like you would want to be paid for a big-time coach. And basically they're trying to do what the Alabama Crimson Tide did back in 2004 when they lured Saban out of Miami, who you can say he wasn't successful, but, you know, the thing is Alabama went after him pretty hard. Gave him a lot of money, and a lot of people criticized it at the time, saying, whoa, what is Alabama doing paying a coach this much? Well, Michigan's doing the exact same thing that Bama did, and And hopefully, if you're a Michigan fan, it works out. I think Harbaugh would be a home run hire, honestly. I think he'd be a much better college coach. I mean, he's a pretty darn good NFL coach. Went to the NFC Championship game, the Super Bowl, and hasn't won it. But, I mean, that doesn't mean a whole lot. I think if Michigan can grab him, Tarvin, it's a game changer for the Big Ten.
Well, the difference that I see between Saban and Harbaugh is Saban was an elite recruiter. He's a workaholic 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He understands the college game. Where Harbaugh, if you go back to Stanford and look, I mean, he had some good teams, and he won some games, but he never won that big game, and he never really recruited that well. And, Sonia, I'll go to you on this. I mean, if Harbaugh does come to Michigan, are they a contender immediately? I mean, there's a lot of holes in that roster, and I don't know if Harbaugh can recruit well enough or wants to recruit well enough to get it going fast. Michigan wants to win now. They don't want to win 3 years from now.
They're going to have to wait. It's the same thing when Saban came the first year. You know, I think we went, 8-5 or something like that?
7-6.
People at Michigan, the Michigan faithful – or the Michigan Wolverine fans, they need to understand, just like all of these other teams' fans need to understand, no coach is going to come in and do anything overnight, okay?
Ever, right.
The first thing they have to do is they have to evaluate the talent that is there right now. Then they have to go back and see, okay, where is our greatest need? So they have to build depth. That doesn't happen overnight. That's going to take 2-3 recruiting classes to get that depth up to the point where, you know, you actually can say, okay, boom, we can just reload. I think what's going on is that a lot of these fans are having unrealistic expectations based on a coach's success, you know, at another situation. Like if, just say, for example, Saban, which we know won't happen due to the clause in his contract, say he left Alabama and went to Florida. Okay, Florida fans are going to think, all right, we're going to compete for a national championship, you know, first year. No, you're not. They always have to start out by evaluating. Butch Jones is the best example of that right now, and another perfect example is Jerry Kill up in Minnesota. The man has been there, and each year the program has improved. It's improved each year. And the Minnesota faithful and the fans, they know and they see this improvement, so they give him time. Harbaugh is not going to walk in and just wave a magic wand and UM's going to be, you know, ranked in the top five. This is not going to happen.
Yeah, so Jason, you're our Big Ten expert here. And, you know, you talk about Big Ten SEC. You look at some of the names in the SEC of the coaches. I mean, they pay the money. They pay their assistants. What would the name Jim Harbaugh do to the Big Ten credibility?
It'd give Michigan the same edge they've had for decades. So it's not like it's going to put him above Urban. He'll just be, I mean, forever and a day, Tarvin, the only people competing for five-star recruits have always been Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State, and Wisconsin to a degree. So, I mean, he's walking into a fertile land, but you know, he's got to rebuild that whole frickin' roster. So He's looking at least 2 years. I mean, it took Kill 2 years to get things going in Minnesota. So, and you know what we had to work with. So, I don't know. You know, I think it's more Harbaugh is in a lot of ways similar to Saban, like Sonia said. I don't think he enjoys not being able to tell grown adults what to do. That's just, he's not programmed that way. And he can do that in college. So, you know, in that case, Harbaugh was a good coach at Stanford. So, you know, it's not like he wasn't a good coach in college. So,
yeah, he just wasn't the recruiter,
I'm all
you know.
I'm all for it to make Urban a little more nervous.
Yeah, and Trey, I'll ask you, I'll come back to you on this. If Harbaugh is not hired at Michigan, who do they hire? Because, I mean, signing day is getting here. And if you want to to get any kind of recruiting class, you have to get somebody a big hire. Now, who do they go after? If they put all their eggs in one basket and Harbaugh takes all of his eggs, I mean, who do they get?
Well, the name I keep hearing is Greg Schiano, the former Tampa Bay coach and Rutgers coach.
Oh, God. Get him out of here.
Yeah, that's the name I'm hearing. That's the name I'm hearing.
Well, Trey, you said you had some breaking news regarding Ole Miss. Let's hear it, buddy.
Yeah, this just came across from Twitter Wire, and I got two sources so we can verify it. Looks like Chad Kelly, the 3- or 4-star, depending on when he was recruited, Ole Miss, basically future franchise quarterback. If you recall, he was the Clemson quarterback who has kicked off Clemson, who was a 4-star elite prospect. Sort of set their program back. They expected him to be playing this past year. He signed on JUCO signing day with Ole Miss. He was arrested early this morning, Tarvin, for fighting with police after not being able to be removed voluntarily from a bar. Proceeded to fight police, kicking them, screaming at them, punching them. Apparently threatened to come back in the place and shoot them all in AK-47. So Ole Miss had baked their season for next year from having him as their starting quarterback, and we'll have to see what happens. He just signed his letter of intent on JUCO this week, so he's already in trouble.
Good job.
In Buffalo.
Good job, Hugh Freeze. Great job out there. And I've got a message that Quinn Thomas – well, I'll talk about this story in just a second. Quinn Thomas wants to come back on and join us about the Michigan head coaching search. Go ahead, Quinn.
Well, I think if they get Harbaugh, like – Sonia was saying, it'll take time. It takes time to get players to buy into your system, and it takes time to get the right recruits you want. Fans that get new coaches are kind of looking at what Gus did and thinking that can happen every year. That's not realistic. Gus knew a lot of those guys and recruited a lot of those guys. He's in a totally different situation than these coaches who have never coached at the program who are trying to get players to buy into their system.
Yep. All right, Quinn, man. I appreciate that. And the Ole Miss, I mean, Sonia, what do you do right now with a quarterback that just signed with you and with two New York cops being shot? God, I mean, this crazy people in this world. I mean, what do you do with this kid? You don't threaten cops.
You drop them. You drop them like a bad habit. I mean, what are you going to do? How do you explain that away? Seriously, how
Auburn,
do you explain
Auburn
that away?
Auburn's going to sign him.
No, Florida. Nah, McElwain's down there, so he won't. But, no, I think you have to drop the kid. And what these kids need to realize, and if anybody has not noticed this, the NFL – With Roger Goodell, and even though he's as wishy-washy as it comes as far as meting out any sort of punishment, they are very, very focused on off-the-field behavior, which trickles down into college football. So it doesn't matter how great you are in college football, if they see all of these issues off the field, and then when you look at the history, okay, look at Johnny and all the things that happened and all the stories that came up with him, he finally gets a start in Cleveland, and he fluffs it. Now, nobody remembers that, number one, he's a rookie, it's his first game, and that Cleveland has an O-line that is about the same as Green Bay's. All they remember is, oh, he partied and when he was in college, during the off season, he was partying in Vegas. That's all they remember. These kids need to get it into their heads. Your life is not your own now. If you want to get to the next level, you've got to behave on the field and off the field. Whether you want to be or not, you are a role model. And these kids they're going to learn the hard way because these coaches, professional and college, are not playing anymore. It's not worth it. There's 18,000 kids standing right behind you that are dying to get that spot and who will behave.
Yeah. And Trey, I'll go back to you. I mean, you can't control everything a kid does. I mean, you don't know everything, but do you think in researching this quarterback that there was any red flags whatsoever regarding this kid? You don't just all of a sudden try to fight police, threaten to kill them all of a sudden. I mean, if you do your homework on this kid, I'm sure you've heard stories about this from his closest friends, you know, just acquaintances or what? I mean, what do you think Hugh Freeze is saying now?
Well, I mean, I think Hugh Freeze probably sitting down and said, you know, this is your second chance, sort of a la what a lot of coaches say to these guys have been booted off other teams. I mean, he was booted off Clemson for some pretty serious stuff. He probably sat him down and said, hey, this is your second chance. You know, you have a chance to redeem yourself, and then what happens? The guy, less than a week from his letter of intent sent from Hugh Freeze. And you got to wonder, too, this is not a kid who has a real relationship with Hugh Freeze. I mean, he just signed. I mean, other than being recruited, this isn't a guy who's been on the roster for a year who maybe Hugh knows really well and can, you know, thinks he can save him. I think this is going to be really, really bad for Kelly when this all comes out. I mean, without having a relationship, I think they move on.
Well, Trey, I forgot to – you weren't on the show when I wanted your opinion on this. I'm glad we're talking about coaching. Will Muschamp at Auburn, the hire. Give us your thoughts on that real quick. How is that going to impact recruiting for Auburn? How is that going to affect on-the-field play next year?
Well, it puts in some five-star guys who are leaning towards Florida. You know, C.C. Jefferson, who may be leaning toward Alabama now. But Byron Cowart, who is taking an official to Auburn now, and that wasn't really on his radar before. So, I mean, it puts some premier defensive linemen in play for Auburn immediately. And I think it improves the defense, obviously, significantly. I mean, Will Muschamp is an elite defensive coordinator. And, you know, I obviously you just want, if you're Auburn, you want that bad because, I mean, Will Muschamp, is a good coach. I liked going against him at Florida State, obviously. I thought he was a classy guy. And wish him the best at Auburn. He's going to do very well there.
Yeah, and there's some big hires at Auburn in the history. Pat Dye being number one. I think you have to put Gus at number two because he actually hired Muschamp, but I have to put Muschamp at three because this is exactly what a team needed. That's what they were missing, that leadership on defense, missing Lawson all year, some injuries still. I mean, you have a coach with 4 years' experience as a head coach in the SEC coming to your defense, kind of like Lane Kiffin. He had the Oakland Raiders, Southern Cal. He had the coaching experience, Tennessee. Now he's an offensive coordinator. Look how he did at Alabama. Should we expect the same results out of Muschamp as Kiffin had this year?
Oh, he'll have immediate impact for sure. I'd look at Auburn, and I think defensively they need to recruit still, and Muschamp will help them do that. We may not see it this year, Tarvin. You'll probably start seeing it in 16. But I don't know. We'll see how long Muschamp stays. I think he's looking to bounce into a head coaching job, maybe a 1 to 2 year hire, but it's going to be a good 1 to 2 years in defense, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm thinking 2 years. And the first person he mentioned, Trey, was if you mention a player in your press conference, you got to know that player is pretty important. And he mentioned Carl Lawson 2 times. He was you know Carl Lawson, Trey, the big defensive lineman. He was a freshman the year they played in the championship. But he's got a lot of talent to work with. Muschamp's very happy and pleased, he said, with the talent on that team. So at least we have that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's talent there. You've recruited 4 and 5-star guys, a solid 3-star. I mean, that's all you can do. Obviously, it's upgraded coordinator for sure.
Well, let's touch on a couple bowl games real quick before we go. We're not going over the Toilet Bowl, the Blue Bonnet Bowl, the Helicopter Bowls right now. We're going to kind of go into the future a little bit to New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, if that's okay with y'all. And I want to start – I'm sorry, Wells just barked and kind of threw me off a little bit. But Clemson, Oklahoma, Trey, I mean, I know this game's not huge or anything, but – December 29th, Oklahoma, 3.5-point favorite over Clemson. What does this game mean, really, to you? I mean, what does it mean going forward? Will either team want to show up and play?
Well, I mean, that'll be interesting to see. I mean, with Deshaun Watson being out for Clemson, we don't get a chance to really see the future for Clemson. I mean, this is going to be a different game without him. Clemson also lost their starting running back and starting receiver, so they're pretty banked up. Guys who will not play in the bowl game, so they're going to be I don't see them winning this game with the talent they have left. What's a big deal for Clemson is they have two guys right now. If you look at their top five recruiting class, and I think to keep that, they need to keep Ray Ray McCloud and another guy, a five-star guy. I can't remember his name right now, but those two guys are still taking visits. They want to impress those guys and at least show them that they still have talent on that roster. Obviously, Deshaun Watson's a big drag for those guys or draw for those guys. So for Clemson, you're playing for that recruiting class that's currently top five. For Oklahoma, I think Stoops needs to show progression. I mean, after last year beating Alabama, what this year was not a good year considering the quarterback was supposed to be a strength. He's back for the bowl game, Tarman. So Trevor Knight's back. I think Oklahoma wins this game, and I think it's probably 10 points. I just think Oklahoma's a better football team with the guys who are going to show up, I guess, who aren't injured.
Well, Sonia, let's stay on December 29th right here. Texas-Arkansas, I mean, it's an intriguing game to me. Arkansas, what's intriguing, Arkansas is a six-point favorite over Texas. I mean, what do you see in this game?
Oh, boy, it's going to be a battle of the we're on our way back. That's the best way I can see it. Both teams are 6-6, and you've got two great coaches. You've got Charlie Strong, and I've got to give Bielema his credit. You know, I've forgiven him after his first year of going winless in the SEC, so I'll acknowledge that he exists again. But that's going to be, I don't know. Arkansas has been showing up, and these guys are getting a whole lot better on defense and then throwing in a few surprises there. But Texas,
Arkansas's O-line is huge.
Yeah, I think I got some great friends, very, very close friends that are Horns, but I might have to look at Arky for this one. I don't think Texas is going to be ready.
Yeah, I know Dustin Porterfield, Jason, he's going to pump this game up as Texas is going to roll and blow them out. But at the end of the day, I think Arkansas is going to come in and just physically whip Texas. I mean, Texas is back on their way, but I think playing in the SEC West has given Arkansas a big advantage, especially getting some rest, some experience, some coaching for a month. What do you think about this one, Jason?
Sonny and I will have a good supply of Kleenex. So, I take Arky.
Well, Trey, let's...
They're huge.
I'm sorry,
they're
go
huge.
Ahead, Jason.
No, their O-line is huge. And they can run the ball, so I'll take Arky. It'll be close, but I'll take Arky.
Trey, who do you like?
You know, I'm still contemplating that one, to be honest. I think the quarterback for Texas is going to give them a little bit of a surprise. You know, again, Texas is a team with a top 10 recruiting class right now, so people are going back to Texas. I think Charlie Strong, this is a game that he will have his guys fired up for. So I don't know, man. I'm still thinking about that one.
Well, you know what sucks about this next game we're going to talk about? We're going to break down these more next Sunday. We're going to go through a 2 or 3 hour show to break down the bowls. But an intriguing matchup to me on December 31st. But the only sucky thing is it's 12:30 in the afternoon, the Chick-fil-A Bowl, Trey. TCU comes in playing Ole Miss. I mean, a team that got snubbed. You know, they should have been in the playoff, they think. How do they show up mentally to play a team like Ole Miss? Because one thing I'll tell you about Ole Miss, they're going to play defense. And I think TCU is going to struggle to actually move the ball on this defense.
Well, I mean, it's a battle of offense and defense. And then, you know, we've seen this before with teams that are playing sort of secondarily type bowls. They have trouble re-engaging that momentum they had. So that's the big thing for TCU. Does Gary Patterson get them back fired up to show the world that they deserve to be in the playoff, or do they come out flat? Because I think Ole Miss is happy to be there. And I think Hugh Freeze needs a statement for recruiting. So I think Gary Patterson will have to see how much motivation does his team have, because that offense looks real good. But, you know, this is one of those things. A lot of times when we have time off, Tarvin, it's the offensive teams that struggle.
Exactly, and this team right here, Ole Miss, they're going to hit you in the mouth. I think they have a lot of momentum playing in the SEC West, going through that gauntlet, but ending up beating their rival, Mississippi State. Hugh Freeze gets a contract. Next game, Sonya, Louisville, Georgia. Here's a team with Mark Richt has not fared well in bowl games. They lost to Nebraska last year. I mean, a coach that underachieves every year. Somehow Georgia is a 6.5-point favorite over Louisville, and I just don't know which Georgia team's going to show up.
I'm the same way. And going back to the other game, I'm going to call TCU because I'm sorry, Ole Miss is a fraud. So going back to this game, Georgia. Georgia is that team that will they'll get your hopes up and get you all hyped up and blow it. Unless they are leading by 3 or more touchdowns going into halftime, Georgia will usually choke away a lead. Louisville, I'm just thinking they might pull the upset. I got to go with Louisville on this one. I just cannot trust Georgia. I can't see Georgia will be great this weekend and then turn around and totally suck the next. They're just not consistent enough for me. Louisville actually is trying. I've seen a little bit more consistency with them. I've got to go with Louisville.
Well, one thing that people don't talk about in this game, or I haven't heard, Todd Grantham, the old defensive coordinator for Georgia that left to go to Louisville, took some players with him that transferred. There's some bad blood between these two teams. And Trey, let's don't forget, Petrino leaving the Falcons in Georgia to
right.
take another job. So there's a lot of bad blood in this one. Who do you like, Trey?
Well, I mean, more so than any of that, Tarvin, this is one of those teams that if you look at after Florida State, teams have played them a lot of injuries. Louisville's real banged up after that game, and a lot of those guys aren't back for the year. A lot of those out for the year, including a quarterback, is pretty important. So, again, another team that's going to the bowl games that's limping in, that won't be healthy by bowl time. I don't like teams without starting quarterbacks, so Louisville is until I hear their quarterbacks back, I don't like their chances.
Well, remember, Sunday night, we're going to go over an intense bowl. I hope to have all of you guys back. We're going to go through all these games. But, Jason, I can't leave this show tonight without asking you about Minnesota and Missouri here. A big, you know, the Buffalo Citrus Bowl here, Buffalo Wild Wing Citrus Bowl, a very good bowl for Minnesota. I mean, I know you're happy, a New Year's Day bowl. What do you think about your chances lining up against Missouri? I think you have a good chance to win this.
You always have a shot. But for me personally, I said at the very beginning of the year that when we make a bowl, I want to face an SEC. And I only say that because, to me, that's my measuring stick. This game is a measuring stick for me. I hope they win. I think it'll be close. I won't be disappointed if they don't win, but it'll give me some kind of measuring stick of where we stand compared to other conferences. I don't know. I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to run on us. I mean, we got a good run defense, and we should be able to run on them. So, yes, I like our chances. This one might go to the Gophers.
Your chances as well. Yeah, Trey, I mean, I like Minnesota in this one. I don't know who you like, but I've watched Missouri play this year, and that's one team that I'm not impressed with, that I think Minnesota could just run the ball on them as well and be able to do some play action. Missouri's a team that they made the SEC championship game because they played in the East, and that's the only reason. I mean, it's because the East was so bad. I think they're a 5-point favorite over Minnesota because of the perception of the Big Ten and the SEC. So I like Minnesota in this game to get it done.
Well, I think it's going to come down to Minnesota running the football and whether they can run successfully. I mean, Missouri's 3 losses this year have all come to teams that run the football really well. So, and that's what Minnesota needs to do is run the football well. And they'll have a lot of success versus Missouri. They can't, Tarvin, and Missouri's going to have a pretty good game.
Well, I have one chance for one more game before I have to go, and this is a very intriguing matchup. Michigan State and Baylor, Sonya. I mean, on paper, this is going to be a fun game to watch. What do you think? A Big Ten powerhouse versus a co-champion of the Big 12?
I'm sorry, Jason was laughing as we're sitting to the...
Take Baylor, take Baylor.
He's like, take Baylor, take Baylor. I think it's going to be a great game. Baylor, I'm kind of biased against Baylor right now because of Art and his whining after they didn't make the Final Four. But Baylor has a great team. Michigan State, though, Sparty can jump up and hit you straight in the mouth. I mean, look at how they led Oregon when they played Oregon. Have they had some issues? Yes. But Michigan State is just one of those teams that they're kind of like the little engine that could. So I personally would love for Michigan State to win this game, but when it comes down to it, Baylor will probably pull it out.
Trey, I'm going to tell you one thing here. I mean, there's several advantages. Baylor, they have the speed. They have the team speed. We saw Oregon and Michigan State play two teams similar to each other, Oregon and Baylor. Oregon ran them off the field in the second half. And another thing about this game, it's in Texas. And you have a Baylor pissed-off team right now. Bryles, the coach, is mad. That could work against him. I don't know. But I like Baylor in this game, Trey. I know you're a Michigan State fan, but I think Baylor whips the piss out of them in this game.
Well, I mean, this is going to come down to matchups like KD Cannon, who is a freshman All-American for Baylor, against, you know, the Utah guys who are big, huge, physical, first-round draft picks. Senior Michigan State corners. That's going to be a matchup to watch, Tarvin. I think Baylor is going to be fired up, though. I really do. I think Bryles has them where they need to be going into the bowl game versus a team that's going to come flat. I think they're going to come out very focused. I think Bryce Petty came out and basically said, pretty much, like, we respect their decision. We're going to show them on the field, you know, their mistake, which is kind of the focus you need as a starting quarterback for a team like this. So, I think this is going to be a really good matchup, and it's going to come down to those corners versus those young speed receivers for Baylor. We'll have to see who wins that matchup. I think that will win the day.
Yeah, and everybody, thanks for joining us tonight. Trey was back, Sonia, Jason, great, Brett Smith in the chat room, Quinn, everybody, man. I know it's the holidays. Thanks for taking the time to come out and talk some sports with us. We have some fun doing this. And next Sunday night, we're not going to have a show Wednesday due to the Christmas holiday coming up, but Sunday night's going to be our intense bowl show. We're going to go through all the major bowls. We're going to pick them. We're going to be there Sunday night, next Sunday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We're going to also talk about the playoffs coming up in the NFL. So it's just some exciting times here. Some big bowl games, some big playoff matchups. You'll find it here. And I want to give you a little name to throw out for the Michigan job. Could be possibly Dan Mullen of Mississippi State. Don't sleep on him right now. I don't know if his defensive coordinator leaving the way he did. I don't know if that's the writing on the wall. And I don't know. Dan Mullen could be the name to go to Michigan to escape that SEC West, to get back up there with his boy Urban Meyer and stress him out a little more. But, you know, we're going to talk about that Ohio State-Alabama game Sunday night. The Oregon-Florida State game, Auburn-Wisconsin, some of the bigger games out there that people that listen to this show are entertained with, Mississippi State, Georgia Tech. Just an update, 14-3, Seattle, 3 minutes and 41 seconds left till half. Looks like they're wanting that division. Looks like they're going to try to take it tonight. So 8:30 next Sunday night. Make sure you tell everybody, call in. This will be our last show of the year. So we're going to make it a big one. So get ready. Sunday night, 8:30. Thanks, y'all. Have a great week.